The Torah content from now through Pesach has been sponsored by the Kofsky family in loving memory of Adira, who loved big ideas and asking big questions. Hello, I'm Rabbi Matt Schneeweis, and this is the Tzok Jew podcast where we explore the relationship between Judaism and Stoicism. Yesterday's episode was part one of my reflections on my upcoming winter break 2022, which by the time you listen to this, then God willing, I will have already commenced the winter break, but I'm actually recording this on Thursday morning before I leave, and that's going to be important for the content here. So unlike yesterday's episode, which focused on a specific theme, this one's going to be several miscellaneous themes here. So we're going to start with a reading from Seneca's letter number 2 and Marcus Aurelius's Meditations book 4, chapter 3, which if you are a longtime listener of the Stoic Jew podcast, you may recognize this pairing because this was, I believe, the first episode I recorded after last year's winter break. Or maybe during last year's winter break, now that I think about it. Was I making episodes during the break? Oh man, if so, then that past me really needs to listen to yesterday's episode. Anyway, so the one line I'm going to pull out of Seneca's letter number 2 is, "The primary indication to my thinking of a well-ordered mind is a man's ability to remain in one place and linger in his own company." That's very reminiscent of the famous statement from Blaise Pascal, which I could not track down the source this morning, which is, "All of humanity's problems stem from man's inability to sit quietly in a room alone." And Marcus Aurelius, in Meditations, Book 4, Chapter 3, elaborates on this. He says, "Men look for retreats for themselves, the country, the seashore, the hills, and you yourself, too, are peculiarly accustomed to feel the same want. Yet all this is very unlike a philosopher, when you may, at any hour you please, retreat into yourself. For nowhere does a man retreat into more quiet or more privacy than into his own mind, especially one who has within such things as that he only has to look into and to become at once in perfect ease. And by ease, I mean nothing else but good behavior. Continually, therefore, grant yourself this retreat and repair yourself. But let them be brief and fundamental truths, which will suffice at once by their presence to wash away all sorrow and to send you back without repugnance to the life to which you return." Now, I think in yesterday's episode, we talked about Ryan Holiday's commentary about how of the two, Marcus Aurelius and Seneca, Marcus Aurelius was far more driven and did not have as healthy of a life-work balance. And I think you can kind of see glimmers of that here, that he says, you don't need a vacation, just retreat into your own mind and think about truths for a little while, So, but even Marcus Aurelius is recognizing the benefit of being able to take that time of that moment of mindfulness and to regain your presence. Now, last year, again, reflecting back to January 2021, then, that retreat, that cabin retreat, or really my yurt retreat, was when I first really started seriously experimenting with meditation. When I did the Naval Ravikant 1 hour a day of sitting and doing nothing, which I made 4 episodes about in January 2021, which if there's room, I'll hyperlink them below. And so I didn't have the tool of meditation last year in the same way that I have it now. I've been practicing it, on a daily basis since January. And so I think that I will be able to get more out of it this year than I did last year. Furthermore, in January 2021, I had not yet read any of Tara Brach's books and did not have the tool of the sacred pause. And I've made episodes on this as well, but let me just read to you 2 paragraphs from her book, Radical Acceptance, when she introduces the notion of the sacred pause. She says, "Learning to pause is the first step in the practice of radical acceptance. A pause is a suspension of activity, a time of temporary disengagement when we are no longer moving toward any goal. Unlike the frantic pilots," which she described in the earlier muscle, "we stop asking, what can I do? What do I do next? The pause can occur in the midst of almost any activity and can last for an instant, for hours, or for seasons of our life. We may take a pause from our ongoing responsibilities by sitting down to meditate. We may pause in the midst of meditation to let go of thoughts and reawaken our attention to the breath. We may pause by stepping out of daily life to go on a retreat or to spend time in nature or take a sabbatical. We may pause in conversation, letting go of what we're about to say in order to genuinely listen and be with the other person. We may pause when we suddenly feel moved or delighted or saddened, allowing the feelings to play through our heart. In a pause, we simply discontinue whatever we are doing, thinking, talking, walking, writing, planning, worrying, eating, and become wholeheartedly present, attentive, and often physically still. You might try it now. Stop reading and sit there, doing no thing, and simply notice what you are experiencing. That was where you were supposed to pause. Okay, a pause is by nature time limited. We resume our activities, but we do so with increased presence and more ability to make choices. In the pause before sinking our teeth into a chocolate bar, for instance, we might recognize the excited tingle of anticipation and perhaps a background cloud of guilt and self-judgment. We may then choose to eat the chocolate, fully savoring the taste sensations, or we might decide to skip the chocolate and instead go out for a run. When we pause, we don't know what will happen next, but by disrupting our habitual behaviors, we open to the possibility of new and creative ways of responding to our wants and fears. So again, I did not know the idea of the sacred pause in January of 2021. And once I learned about it in April or May, then I started using it consciously in different ways, both integrated with the mitzvah system, as we've talked about before, or just as a technique in general. But I feel like I actually, in these last couple of months, have lost touch with the sacred pause. Even though I've still done meditation, I still do mindful eating, I still do, you know, my mezuzah pause, I still do the talis meditation. There are a bunch of these forms of the sacred pause that I take. I feel like I have not been doing it spontaneously anymore. And I certainly haven't done it for a very long time. So I think one of the things I'm going to try to do on this winter break is to reignite the habit or reinvigorate the habit of the sacred pause. And I actually encountered another excerpt from Seneca. This is from letter number 83, in which he provides, I think, a good focus in this sacred pause that I'll be taking. So he says, I will keep constant watch over myself and most usefully will put each day up for review. For what makes us evil is that none of us looks back upon our own lives. We reflect upon only that which we are about to do. And yet our plans for the future descend from the past. So this is, again, one of the features of my daily life is the daily grind of always thinking about what's next, always thinking about the next year, always preparing for the next week's worth of classes. And I see the value in the sacred pause of stopping from focusing on the future and being present. But I do think that this sacred pause that I have now come to annually take in January of every year is also a good opportunity to reflect on the past. I mean, I kind of did that in my birthday episode this past Monday, where I reflected on the changes that have occurred throughout the year. But I think just a more localized pause of reflecting back on the semester and seeing, in terms of my life-work balance, how I have been operating. And I think there's a difference between, you know, between stopping during the daily grind and looking back versus stopping, pausing, allowing the dust to settle. And then when I'm not in the throes of the daily grind, looking back at the past in order to prepare for the future. That's a subtle new difference, but I do think experientially, if you've tried either of those, then you'll notice the difference as well. So that's something I hope to do. Switching gears, another Stoic idea that I've been thinking about is the premeditatio malorum, right? The idea of why am I blanking on the translation? Premeditation of evils, that's what it is. The premeditation of evils, of thinking about what can go wrong, or as Shlomo Melech says, Al tishalo biyom machar ki lo seda ma yelad yom. Let me look at this. Maseledium, Mayeledium. Hold on, let me look at the actual pasuk. Where is this? This is in just 1 second. Is it chapter 27 in Mishlei? Let's look it up. I should have looked this up ahead of time. Chapter 27. Boom, it is. Altis Hallel, it's 27:1. Altis Hallel Biom Machar Kiloseda Ma Yeledium. Yeah. So do not praise yourself about tomorrow, for you do not know what the day may bring. So I have been, as I mentioned in my birthday episode, I have been extremely nervous about whether or not this winter break is going to happen for me, because right now, in January 2022, Omicron is raging and surging, peaking. I don't know what point we're at today. And I was very concerned that I might come down with coronavirus and that would jeopardize my travel plans. And that's why I delighted in getting sick last week, because I thought that that was Omicron, and I thought that that would at least give me a little bit of an immunity so that I wouldn't have to cancel my plans, or I wouldn't be in danger of bringing this home to my parents. But as I said, that it turns out I did not have coronavirus. And then this week, then it turns out that coronavirus is not yet gone from the yeshiva dorm where I teach, and so I've been wearing my N95, but still worried about maybe getting it and bringing it back. I have a test. I know rapid tests are not always the most reliable when it comes to Omicron, but I have a rapid test scheduled for a half an hour from this moment. And so, like, I've been, hyper aware that there are things that could interfere with my travel plans. I was worried about the weather. I was worried about the cancellations of the flights due to understaffing to shortage of staff. So it's interesting. These last couple of weeks, I've been thinking about all these things that could go wrong, and as a result of that, I've been not allowing myself to accept the fact that this trip is actually going to happen, that I'm actually might be able to go back home to Seattle. And last night, as I was struggling with my insomnia, then it started to dawn on me that, like, maybe this is actually going to happen. And I, as soon as I had that thought, I was like, no, don't think that, because maybe if you think it, then it's going to make the bad things happen. And that's when I realized that, like, there's a category of, people say don't jinx it, right? And as someone who is coming from a rationalist Maimonidean framework, obviously I don't believe in jinxes, and even before that, like, I never consciously, at least, remember having a feeling like as a kid, even before I was Jewish, like worrying about jinxing something, But then that emotion showed up last night when I was finally like allowing myself to believe that maybe this thing will actually happen. Then I had this recoil, like I recoiled backwards and said, like, no, don't think that until it actually happens. And I realized that there is this superstitious, infantile, childish feeling that I have where, like, if I allow myself to think that this thing is going to happen, then that itself could somehow have an impact on the universe and make it not happen. Like, maybe the flight will get canceled, or maybe, like, it'll make my rapid test come back positive, or I'll get into an accident on the way to the airport or something like that. And it was kind of shocking to me that this superstitious, irrational feeling had been buried under this practice of a rational stoic virtue of premeditatio malorum. And to me, it was just an astounding example about how avodah zarah, how superstitious thinking lurks in at every corner, and can get you when you least expect it and where you least expect it. And I just had never picked up on that in my in this particular manifestation. So that was another thing that I wanted to just express here in regards to premeditatio malorum. There was one more point I was going to make, which was, oh, so this is something else that I think that bears mentioning. And even though it's something about me, then I think it is enough. Okay, let me back up for a second. Marcus Aurelius talks a lot about a person's responsibility to the system, to the society. Like a good Mishlei Tzaddik, Marcus Aurelius was concerned about the system and recognized that he had a role and a responsibility to play. And as Ryan Holiday pointed out in the commentary I read yesterday, Marcus Aurelius was very hard on himself and did not take breaks. And I think part of that is this feeling that, like, if I am part of a system, then the system cannot survive if I take a break, And in my case, with this particular break, then I'm feeling this a little bit more because I'm taking my break earlier than the official yeshiva break. The official yeshiva break is going to start on the 20th, and I'm taking my break starting today on the 13th. And I give 3 to 4 shiurim in yeshiva every day. And is that right? Yeah, of course, 3 to 4 shiurim every day. See, I'm starting to forget already. And there's this feeling, like this irrational feeling of, like, if I don't give the shiurim, like, my talmidim aren't going to learn, And really, that's just ridiculous. Like,
Like, okay, fine. Maybe there's going to be a couple students who, if they don't have the shiur to go to, then they're not going to learn. But first of all, that's on them. That's not on me. You know, like there's nothing stopping them from learning. I have plenty of recorded content that they can listen to, and they could learn with a chavrusa. They could do their own learning project. They can even give shiur. I even offered for them to give shiur in my absence as an exercise that will help them to develop. But the irrationality comes from me taking the blame for what other people do. But then there's the fact that none of us are indispensable, right? I mean, you know, the greatest greatest human being who ever existed, Moshe Rabbeinu, what you know, died and was not allowed to go into Eretz Yisrael, and Yehoshua had to lead them in. And you know, and yeah, would Moshe have been better? Yeah, he would have. But it's not he's not indispensable. You know, no single person is indispensable. So I think that there is this guilt for people like myself and Marcus Aurelius who are like workaholics and who put pressure on themselves to uphold their responsibilities. There is this feeling that if I let go at all, or if I don't contribute to the system in the way that I am expected to, then everything's going to collapse. And I think just realizing the fallacy of that thinking, that that's just, as Epictetus would say, that's just an impression, and that's not really what reality is. I think realizing that can also help to help people like us to let go and to take these breaks that we actually need, as I talked about yesterday. So those are my thoughts. That's it for today's episode, and that is it for the next 2 weeks. I hope that I could succeed in not making episodes of the Stoic Jew podcast in the next 2 weeks and not even thinking about it. I think that I'm poised and set up much better this year than last year. So I hope that I will be able to succeed in that goal. And yeah, that is it for today's episode. If you've gained from what you've learned here, please consider contributing to my Patreon at www.patreon.com/RabbiSchneeWeiss. Alternatively, if you would like to make a direct contribution to the Rabbi Schneeweis Torah Content Fund, my Venmo is at Matt Schneeweis, and my Zelle and PayPal are mattschneeweis@gmail.com. Even a small contribution goes a long way to covering the cost of my podcast and will provide me with the financial freedom to produce even more Torah content for you. And I'm going to add here that there's a special need for the Rabbi Schneeweis Torah Content Fund here. If you'd like to, you know, those of you who have contributed, I assume are contributing to fund the Torah content. But remember, based on yesterday's episode, me taking this break is critical for producing Torah content because I need to restore the fertility of my mind. So what's one thing that I'm going to need is firewood. Okay, is that I plan on enjoying a nice wood fire during my week in the cabin. So you know how on the internet, people have like on their websites, they'll have like buy me a coffee and you could like contribute to them to buy coffee for them. If you'd like to buy me firewood, to fuel the restoration of my mind, then that would be most welcome. I don't know what firewood prices are these days, because usually the Airbnb host provides, but this time I have to buy my own. So that's just an option if you want to sponsor something other than direct Torah content. If you would like to sponsor a day's or a week's worth of content, or if you are interested in enlisting my services as a teacher or tutor, you can reach me at rabbishnamos@gmail.com. Thank you to my listeners for listening. Thank you to my readers for reading. And thank you to my supporters for supporting my efforts to make Torah ideas available and accessible to everyone.